This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
WBBM News Time 1203. It is great to have you with us for the noon business hour, the Friday edition, as another trading week is about to wrap up. I'm Cisco Cotto. We have some beautiful sunshine in Chicagoland, and that'll be here throughout the afternoon. Yes, there are some lingering clouds, but they are on their way out. It is Entrepreneur Friday, taking the trampoline park to a new level. Chicago's CME Group is adding Bitcoin options to its futures market. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, a huge order of electric vans placed by Amazon has an Illinois connection. Let's get the story from Jeff Gilbert, CBS auto reporter based in Detroit. Jeff, what can you tell us about what Amazon is doing here?
Yeah, they're ordering 100,000 electric vans from Rivian. They're a startup based here in the Detroit area, but they want to make electric vehicles in Normal, Illinois, where a Mitsubishi plant shut down several years ago. They want to revamp that plant and build, at first they were talking about pickups and SUVs, and now they're adding this delivery van. And of course, Amazon ordering this many adds immediate legitimacy to Rivian.
Yeah, it is fascinating, too, with that plant in downstate Normal. For the longest time, it was sort of thought to be left for dead, and now it's completely revitalized.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if they've actually done any work yet. As of earlier this year, they hadn't really started working on it, but the goal is to start building vehicles sometime next year. I'm not quite sure when they're going to hire people, but they obviously will need an all-new workforce for that plant. And they've got a lot of auto industry veterans, some of them from big companies like Mercedes. So this is a company that knows what it's doing.
For electric vehicles to really be mainstream, especially delivery vehicles, do they need more orders like this? Big companies placing huge orders? Is that enough to make it go mainstream?
Well, a couple of things here. First, Amazon last year invested $800 million into Rivian, so they saw what was coming. And the second thing is delivery vans have long been thought of as the perfect venue for electric vehicles. You're driving short distances. You're making a lot of stops. You're probably not going to put a lot of miles on the vehicle during the day. Then you can take them back to a central processing area where they can be recharged in the evening when they're not used. So, you know, it cuts down on that range issue that you have with electric cars.
Also, does it seem like maybe maintenance-wise in the long run, because they're investing a lot of money in it, they have to believe that maybe the maintenance on these electric vehicles is not going to be as much as a traditional one?
Well, you don't have to change the oil. You don't have to put in transmission fluid. There are far fewer moving parts. That's an issue in the strike that's going on right now between General Motors and the UAW. The UAW is afraid that long-term with electric vehicles, you won't need as many people to build them. So the simple answer to your question is yes, the maintenance costs are definitely going to be lower.
And this also just, I guess, goes to show you Amazon clearly planning on doing more and more of its own deliveries.
Exactly. And Amazon is a very bright company. And when they do something like this, you can be sure other companies are watching.
Good insight as always. Thank you. Jeff Gilbert, CBS auto reporter, joining us from Detroit. Coming up, Bitcoin makes another move into the mainstream. And later on in today's noon business hour, Apple's new iPhone is dropping. Lots of people waiting in big lines in order to be able to get a first look at it. The Chicago-based CME is adding options to Bitcoin futures. To talk about the significance of this, we welcome back to the show Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, also a political economist. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. Andy, that's the first question right off the bat. Talk about the significance of this.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the CME Group, they create new products only when they really see the demand for them. So the fact that they're creating now an options contract to complement their futures contract on Bitcoin is a good sign for that market. I think it shows the health of that market. We also have ICE Backed, which is another exchange, on Monday that's coming out with a Bitcoin-settled futures contract that's going to be a daily and a monthly one. So you're seeing some interest here. You're seeing these exchanges come forward with new products that are really driven by their demand and by their clients' demand. So that's a good sign for that market.
It's just fascinating to me because I think in a lot of people's minds for a long time, Bitcoin was sort of like tulip bulbs. You know, I mean, no one really thought this was going to stick around.
You know, I was speaking with Brian Durkin, who's the president of the CME Group, last week, and I told him, I said, the best news we can say about Bitcoin is that it's not been hacked. Meaning, yes, there's wallets that have been hacked and other things, but the coin itself has not had problems. And that's the best thing you can say. And that's why it looks like it's sustainable as a financial product. And I think that's why you're starting to see some add-ons to the different offerings that are out there. I think the challenge is, of course, is, you know, with this new options contract, what's interesting is that the volatility in Bitcoin has actually dropped significantly over the last month. I mean, this huge rally from 3,500 up to almost 13,000. But since that time, since beginning of July, it's been in a range, and that range is narrowing a bit. So option contracts, usually they need some volatility, and if you don't get them, then you probably won't see the volumes on it. But we'll see. It's early days yet. We'll see what happens with it. And just one more thing, Cisco, that's really interesting. Keep an eye on what happens with the price of Bitcoin, because the U.S. just announced sanctions on the Iranian central bank. And typically when the U.S. announces sanctions on Iran and like North Korea, you see a pop to these cryptocurrencies as a way to get around the global financial system.
Which is fascinating to me because they're not gold, which has been around forever. Most people still can't even explain what Bitcoin is, and yet they really have become a safe haven.
To some extent, they have. I mean, maybe Bitcoin more than the other ones, but everyone's trying to figure out, does this product correlate to any other investment product out there? Because if it's non-correlated, meaning it doesn't move with the other products, then it becomes very valuable. As an example, like if it's non-correlated to stock prices, well, if you wanted to balance out the risk in your portfolio, that if you had equities, well, you would buy some Bitcoin because Bitcoin doesn't move with equities, right, if that's the case. So that's why this is kind of like the holy grail out there if it is non-correlated. So keep an eye on that. It's really fun, and it's really great to see the innovation that's going on in the financial markets.
But for your average investor, though, Bitcoin still seems very remote. I mean, pretty good maybe to sort of hold off unless you're able to really invest the time in understanding it.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. You really do. You really need to invest the time, understand it. There's a lot of great resources out there to do that. But yes, I mean, the way that I would look at Bitcoin would be the way I would look at like commodities or gold. It should be maybe part of your portfolio, but a really small part for a retail investor.
Always good insight. Thanks so much, Andy. Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. Walgreens is working with Alphabet's drone delivery service, Wing, to test a new service. We welcome Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. You can hear Bruce's reports on health Monday evenings and Saturday mornings here on News Radio WBBM. Bruce, tell us, what is Walgreens doing here?
Well, that's a great question. Walgreens is trying to, they're rolling out a lot of test pilots, and this, I think, is one of the more fascinating ones. They are going to test drone delivery of all sorts of their items. They didn't get specific, but they pretty much said it would be anything and everything that you could put on a drone. And they're doing this in Virginia, near Virginia Tech University, where Wing, which is a company that is owned by Alphabet, which your listeners may be more familiar to Google, which of course got a new name with the parent company. And so they're doing this in an effort. They say, listen, we want to serve our customers in all the ways that we can. I mean, about a year or so ago, they partnered with FedEx. And of course, you know, breathing down the competitive necks of CVS and Walgreens is Amazon, which bought an online pharmacy last year. So it'll be really interesting to see how this technology rolls out. I mean, nobody's necessarily saying that it's definitely going to go across the country or whatever. But I think Walgreens in healthcare, increasingly, you hear all these companies talking about value-based care. It's not a fee-for-service where you go and you get treated and the doctor gets a fee. It's about getting the right care in the right place and in the right time. And I guess a drone could one day be a part of that.
Now, I would imagine if they could get this really up and running well, it would greatly increase their capacity to serve customers.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you interestingly enough, you see where out in small towns and in rural America, where you've had hospitals close, they've been hit hard by some of the Trump administration cuts and efforts. If they do roll back Medicaid expansion, if you will, who knows to say that you don't see a lot of chain drug stores out in rural areas. So let's just say you're living isolated somewhere and you need something from a Walgreens. I mean, I don't even think necessarily that Amazon or FedEx would deliver in certain areas. Maybe not. It would seem to be potentially a cost-effective way to get products to people. Now, they haven't really said that specifically what they're looking at here, but you definitely could see Walgreens expanding their customer base into remote areas, rural areas, hard-to-get areas.
Absolutely. Bruce Jepson, thanks for being with us. Very interesting use of drones, potentially. That's Walgreens. You can hear Bruce's reports on health Monday evening, Saturday mornings here on News Radio. Still ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, fun for the kids while not forgetting about the adult.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. There are rumblings that a breakup could be in the works for AT&T and DirecTV. Entrepreneur Friday, franchising an adventure park for kids. It also keeps adults in mind. Protesters in Chicago and across the globe call for action on climate change. On Wall Street, the Dow down 96, NASDAQ down 64, the S&P down 11. Oil today is up right about 0.5%. We'll have more and more sunshine as the day goes along. We are heading to a high of 84 degrees. More humidity today than we've been experiencing. Right now, 75 O'Hare, 76 Midway, and 75 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. The WBBM Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets now heading lower this afternoon. Let's find out what's going on. We're joined by Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital here in Chicago. Jack, as you've been watching the markets, what are you seeing today?
Yeah, it looks like there's a report out from CNBC that said that the Chinese delegation just canceled a trip to Montana to visit some farms. So investors must be perceiving that that's a setback in the trade negotiations, and the market's reflecting that disappointment.
Ironic, or interesting, I should say, that before that, last 2 days, not really much significant movement.
It hasn't, especially with the central bank, the Federal Reserve, lowering interest rates a quarter of a point during the middle of the week. It certainly didn't really gin up a lot of enthusiasm for any kind of risk-taking.
And is that maybe because it was expected? I mean, everyone knew the Fed was going to lower rates, and telegraphing, they didn't really do much of that.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a large part of it, Cisco. I mean, the whole world expected the lower rates. I think that I'm finding in particular that here's a central bank that's data dependent, and yet we're in a really headline-driven market. So I think the data is really sending the Federal Reserve a lot of mixed signals, particularly in contrast to the headlines, and that's creating a lot of confusion among the 17 policymakers.
Yeah, this movement that we've been talking about here because of the trade war, or at least we think that that's part of it, it really just goes to show you, until a deal is done, it's really difficult to be an investor, given the fact that you just don't know what's going to happen.
It is. It's sort of a binary outcome, I guess, in many respects, and that's, among the most risky. Either we're going to do a deal or we're not, and the likelihood of getting a sweeping deal done before the 2020 election seems rather small. I and a number of investors assume that there'd be, kind of small deals, little small headline victories that could be announced between now and a year from now. But it seems as though President, at least in a press conference this afternoon, President Trump has dismissed having these mini victories, so to speak.
Let's talk about a few, I guess, interesting stocks. First is Apple. You got people waiting in line now in order to get this new iPhone, even though everything I'm hearing is it's not really a significant upgrade. There's just certain people that really love having the latest Apple products.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a big element of it, Cisco. You're right. The cheaper iPhone 11 is a little cheaper than the lower price model last year, so that could be enticing some buyers. I think for the most part, those that need to replace their phone, probably less focused on the new phone as long as it has some incremental value, more focused on their existing phone. If it's cracked, if the battery doesn't work so well, if they just need a new phone, they're going to get it. But I think the key here is the big quantum announcement is going to be next year, 2020. That's when the 5G iPhone is going to be launched. And, my sense is we'll have an interesting uptake this time around, but I think eyes are really on next year.
So when it comes to, I guess we've been talking about this for a while, even with big opportunities like this for Apple to sell a lot of phones, they still need to get looking more towards services if there's going to be any more growth.
That's it. Demand for iPhones, these handsets have been kind of falling off, since the beginning of the year. And that caused some concern among investors early on. The company has made a strategy to shift a lot of their growth to services, certainly higher margin, but will they be able to provide enough services to offset the decline in cell phones? And so far, the results this year have been very positive. They have been able to make that shift, that handoff, so to speak, keep iPhone sales okay, and execute on that transition. And as a result of that, Apple shares are still trading, near their all-time high.
Yeah, for a long time, those FANG stocks, boy, it just seemed like they're just going to keep climbing, and a lot of people were on board, and now there have been some challenges. I'm looking at Netflix. It's now down nearly 7% today, and it's off its high quite a bit for this year.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, this, call it creative destruction or whatever. I mean, that's capitalism. You can't have one player making an outsized profit without inviting competition. And lo and behold, the whole world is now lining up to compete against Netflix, whether it's a Disney or Amazon, Comcast. And so we're seeing, some challenges. And as long as the public markets gives these players enough capital to, invest big time in these properties, in these, movies and other intellectual property, they'll be okay. But the minute shareholders say, that you're spending too much, the game's over for a lot of this stuff.
Jack Ablin, always appreciate your insight. Jack is Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital here in Chicago. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday, a high-flying adventure park looking to expand nationwide, including here in Chicago, and it is not just for the kids. It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we are focusing on an expanding business that is based on active fun. We welcome Rob Cannon, founder and owner of Thrills, based in Danbury, Connecticut. Rob, good to have you on the Noon Business Hour. For people who are not yet familiar with Thrills, kind of give us a thumbnail sketch.
Okay, Thrills is the first high-flying indoor adventure park. It allows adults and children to be on a second story doing obstacles that you normally see on Wipeout or American Ninja Warrior. We have these obstacles, whether it's a sweeper or a log roll. We also have what we call thrills with no skills, slides, and mini tramps. And all of these objects you do that you would traditionally do with on a harness, you do unharnessed, and you fall into extremely large stuntman airbags.
So it seems like it would make it even more fun because the harness, while important, it does take some of the fun out of it.
Correct. And this is really exhilarating and fun for all ages.
So what is it, as an entrepreneur, what is it that made you and the folks who work around you say, hey, we think that there is a niche here that we can take this to a new level?
Well, my wife and I started a trampoline park about 3.5 years ago, and we were part of a franchise system. The franchise system was not very supportive of us, so we were able to, as entrepreneurs, build up a very significant trampoline business. Our landlord offered us space next door adjacent to the trampoline park, and it was my task to come up with an idea that doesn't exist in the world. We did that. Along with my partner, Jason Clemens, who is Performance Rigging Solutions, he's worked with Cirque du Soleil, Billy Joel, Motley Crue, and we built this incredible structure and an incredible, exciting, adrenaline-rushing park.
And it's not just for the kids, right? It seems like sometimes mom and dad feel like they just have to drop the kids off and there's really nothing for them but to sip coffee.
No, we actually, a lot of parents get involved. The parents, we also offer axe throwing and laser tag and e-gaming, and the parents seem to participate. Our VR roller coaster does a 360. All of it very, very popular with adults and kids. We've done a tremendous amount of team-building events for corporations in the area, too.
I'm thinking of the message that it sends to entrepreneurs on the importance of just continually thinking about how you can upgrade, how you can take something to the next level. Because if you're just static, it seems like you're going to lose.
I agree 100%. The proliferation of trampoline parks in this country, I think, is somewhat saturated. What we did is we brought the next concept of family entertainment centers to market, and we have proven that the model works even if it's located near or next to a trampoline park. Our numbers are fantastic. We did $1.8 million the first year with an EBITDA of 33.35% and growing stronger.
And when it comes to you think of mom and dad on Sundays, you got a bunch of TVs. So even if they don't want to play around, you can show up, let the kids play and watch football.
What we do is try to make the parent experience as great for the parents as it is for the kids. We have a leather chair, multiple 32 leather chairs to sit on, 9 TVs. Dad, mom, come in. You want to watch the games on Sundays? We have them all on 9 TVs. We have terrific food, fresh as always. And, we try to make the experience for the parents as good as for the kids.
Now you're scouting Chicago locations, trying to figure out where you may come to Chicago now?
Yeah, we actually are working with a real estate consultant group that works with us that we've employed, and we have actually vetted about 8 to 12 different spots in the Chicago area that would be fantastic for a Thrills. We work with the potential franchisee continually right from the beginning of the process right to the end. We handhold, we offer a turnkey operation. And Chicago would be an amazing place, A, based on the weather, which would be if, you know, you guys have short summers, very cold, wicked winters, and the demographic of a very wealthy area, as well as a very highly populated area.
Yeah, a lot of kids as well. Really, really interesting stuff. Thank you, Rob Cannon. Rob is founder and owner of Thrills. They're scouting out Chicago locations. Still to come, what the fallout would be should AT&T and DirecTV sever their relationship. Looks like it may be happening.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There are reports the marriage between AT&T and DirecTV could be heading to divorce court. Let's get the latest from Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group here in Chicago. Tim, what are you hearing? Is there potentially going to be a breakup here?
Well, there's absolutely conjecture, and a lot of it's been because of what's been in the news. Elliott Management, the hedge fund that now has a $3-something billion stake or ownership stake in AT&T, is pushing for some change as AT&T continues to bob and weave strategically. The acquisition of DirecTV back in 2014 at the time was seen as a viable mechanism to gain some scale, 22 million or so television subscribers, certainly a powerful brand name in television, and the alluring NFL Sunday ticket. Since that time, satellite television, which is a very one-way technology, not very interactive and not very sort of friendly to things like streaming, which has become all the rage since, has lost more than 2 million subscribers. They've kind of botched using the brand name for their new versions, plural, of streaming services. And frankly, Elliott Management sees a business that is the satellite business declining, not growing, and says, why not remove that ill-fated acquisition to enable whatever AT&T is trying to do now with television to happen better and more unencumbered.
And it seems like AT&T, they've been laying all this fiber all over the place, trying to get your internet there as fast as they can. Maybe they'll be okay with streaming as long as you're using them to do the streaming.
Well, I mean, I think that's the vision, but, you know, AT&T, you have to look at it through a longer lens. I mean, the strategy of that company has changed seemingly almost every other year. And it seems, you know, with the Time Warner acquisition last year, you know, they really want to fuse this idea of pipes, albeit through broadband or mobile connections and content. There are still many people, not only in Wall Street, but just in the general television industry, that are still very skeptical about whether that's the right marriage of function and, frankly, the scale, the gargantuan scale of AT&T and their ability really to be nimble enough as a media company needs to be versus being a telco, which is their heritage.
It'll certainly be interesting to watch. We will have you back again soon. Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertaire Group here in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast will be available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.